Hello, dearest friends. Good morning from Lapland. I'm sorry I'm having a new ways my PowerPoint. Wait a second, I tried to put the music down. Just stay with me. I'm sorry, I have to stop sharing for a while. Just take over for a while. I try to find how to put the music down.
Yes, hi everybody, welcome to all of you. It's such an exciting subject, and I said to Tuya yesterday, well, given the references that exist on Shambhala, we could go until the year 2050 and somehow maybe complete it. I'm going to, there is a statement where the Tibetan gives. See, I'm not sure. I don't want to put my screen on right now. I want to let Tuya work with her screen. But I will read to you what the Tibetan says. And it's seven newer truths. excuse me. It says, what are some of the newer truths for which I am responsible as
Michael, please don't go to them. They are written already.
Oh. Well, I just want to say that if these are all written out by Tuya,
yes.
Let me know when you're there, dear. The Shambhala work is unusual in that we know practically nothing about it. You know, we're doing our very best to get into some kind of understanding of hierarchy and to make our connection. However, Shambhala is seeking through what's called the Shambhala impacts to contact humanity and to impress humanity. It has to be ever so careful in how it does this. Now, if we were to go into esoteric psychology, volume one, we would find the names of the first ray lords. And I just want to say that one of the names of the first ray lord, the ray lord, you know, in Shambhala, is the power that touches and then withdraws. So it exquisitely measures how much humanity can really take, because we realize that the fragile forms through which we are working would be exploded, would be destroyed if Shambhala were not exquisitely measured. So, you know, it has not made its appearance on Earth many times in terms of a direct impact upon humanity. And I'll just, it looks like you're ready, Tuya.
I am.
Then I would just say, at the time of individualization, at the time of the great war in Atlantis, and then for a long time until the year 1825, and then recently 1975, the year 2000, and, you know, who knows what the Tibetan will tell us. So there's been a crescendo and an acceleration of the Shambhala impacts, and we have to learn how to deal with this particular type of force. Okay, Tuya.
So hello again, friends. I'm sorry, I'm using now from PowerPoint a different setting and there are things what one is not knowing, but you will see better these slides. So this is a part of my talk in the conference, I think it was 2017. And I'm going to go through this during these coming weeks. That is one portion of it, like an introduction part. And we were thinking that maybe it was just giving us a little flavor for the subject, because we can start it from anywhere, from ever, but this is a little bit what DK has been saying, and also what is in the theosophical writings. So Shambhala. So where is Shambhala? So what is your own thoughts about it? Where is Shambhala? We can all think about it. Do we have some kind of yearning in us? Do we have any heart or mind impact? For me, this whole name Shambhala is somehow so appealing. Just love the whole name. So how do we find it? How do you think, how do you find it? Can it be found? So we may think about those thoughts. At the moment, we are living the dark, so-called dark cycle of the times, the Kali Yuga. When spiritual values are down and God is forgotten, the law is withered. For thousands of years, stories have been told about an inaccessible garden paradise, hidden among the icy peaks and silute valleys of the Himalayas, called by some White Island, Shangri-La. There was a movie, James Hilton's 1933 done novel, Lost Horizon, or Nege Peyul Kembalung. Sorry, I should have been putting that on the screen that you would see how it is written. Kembalung is one of several Beyuls. Beyul means hidden land, similar to Shangri-La or Dagzik Olmolung Ring, or as we call it, Shambhala. This mythical kingdom where the pure at heart live forever among jeweled lakes, wish-fulfilling trees, and speaking stones. These stories have been fascinating spiritual seekers for decades. What is our guarded origin? What is Shambhala? Where is it really? Let us collect a few hints by the different traditions and by the theosophical sources and from writings of AAB. But we cannot find anything what really satisfactions. I think we know only less than 1%. But still, by DK, the subject of Shambhala is something what must and should be thought, and we will start now some of them, some of these studies together. And let us all bring, if we ever hear something, let us try to collect all sources together. By DK, the subject of Shambhala is something what must be studied. There are some definitions about these references of Shambhala, and we will look them. But let us look what DK says about his own work. This is coming from Recent Initiations, from page 251. What are some of these newer truths for which I am responsible as transmitting agent to the world of occult students? Let me briefly state them in the order of their relative importance. And I have been now taking away his descriptions of the other six one. One, the teaching on Shambhala. Little has ever been given on this subject. Only the name was known. So does it mean what he says that little has been given, does he mean these times or any time at all? This teaching includes A, information as the nature of the will aspect. B, indications as the underlying purposes of Sanat Kumara. C, directions as to the building of the Antakarana, which is the first step towards achieving monadic consciousness, and thus the first step towards the way of the higher evolution. When we look some of the studies in Buddhism, we can find there some very precise teaching as well. So when we compare these teachings with Master DK, we can see that his background is coming from there, because he has been essentializing them for us. Then the other teaching by him is the teaching on the new discipleship, the teaching on the seven rays, the teaching of the new astrology, information about the new group of servers and their work, the attempt to form an exoteric branch of the inner ashrams, teaching upon the new world religion. And I think one thing here, which it belongs to this new world religion and the coming future, is of course the coming of the Christ. So, Shambhala has been staying behind the veils millions of years, as you saw these veils. And some of the names are Shangri-La, and now here are those names that I already mentioned earlier. Tisnake Beyul Kembalung, Beyul, Hidden Land, Dagzig Omelung Ring, White Island. And now some of the definitions by DK. So this you see that there are those, White Island is in esoteric teachings, but then the earlier ones, those four ones, are the names in the teaching of Buddhism. And these are very beautiful descriptions by DK. Serene determination and of poise, quiescent will. A world of pure energy, of light, and of directed force. Shambhala can be seen as streams and center of force, centers of force. Or forming a pattern of consummate beauty. And maybe we can think about Sanat Kumara's purpose every morning or his daily ritual. All potently invocative of the world of the soul and of the world of phenomena. It therefore constitutes, in a very real sense, the world of courses and of initiation. Shambhala is essentially the energy of life itself, implemented by the will. The Lord of the world, the Ancient of Days, is releasing new energies into humanity, transmuted in the present furnace of pain and fire agony. This transmutation will bring about a new power of sacrifice. Of inclusive surrender, a clearer vision of the whole, and a cooperative spirit hitherto unknown, and which will be the first expression of that great principle of sharing, so sorely needed today. TK says, I am not here speaking idealistically or mystically. I am pointing out an immediate and possible goal, and I am giving a clue to a scientific process which is going on under our eyes and which is, at this time, at a point of crisis. And we can think about this 2000, what is said that that was the last Shambhala impact, only 21 years ago. So it is, this energy is obviously affecting humanity at this time. So Shambhala is mentioned in various ancient Buddhist and Hindu texts, including the Kalachakra Tantra and the ancient texts of Western Tibet, telling about the mysterious Shangshung, people with magical powers. In Born Buddhism, scriptures speaks about Tazig or Molong Ring, a non-dual spiritual dimension. Understood to be a timeless, perfected realm where peace and joy are the very fabric of being. Some texts locates it to the Mount Kailas, called Yungdrung Gudzek, a pyramidal-shaped mountain Kailas. And this Yungdrung means swastika, faces to four cardinal directions, serving as an axis mundi, or world tree, connecting the heavens, the terrestrial world, and the underworld. It produces nine yungdrungs, nine swastikas, streams or supernatural energies. At the corner points, four rivers flow, representing archetypal thought forms. And next time we will go into these four archetypal thought forms, and they are very interesting because from Kailas streams, the four streams to four directions. So I finished that in this to my presentation from the conference, and hopefully it was giving us some kind of flavor into this fascinating subject. So now, Michael, I will stop sharing.
Well, I think it's very beautiful. And I just wish you'd go on. But I know you have.
Well, it's very interesting. But I think this just this idea of what is in world religion. So let us then talk about these different
symbolisms.
Which are, yeah.
You have your plans. So, well, like I say, this is an inexhaustible subject, at least for us, and we are just getting into it. You know, we just are learning the slightest bit about it. And I found, at the conference, it had been so busy and so pressed that I wondered, could I view it in the same way? And here, you know, it's just such a joy to see that presentation once again. So I hope we will continue with that.
We will continue. And I was just thinking, what kind of thoughts came to your mind? Because for me, when I'm hearing those descriptions, it is so fascinating that it calls from my heart. And also, of course, my mind is starting to circle around this, that there is actually a place which is called Shambhala. And what the group is saying, did you get any thoughts what you would like to share? And of course, we can actually share our videos if you want to.
Yeah. I'm just digging up a couple of things here that I think will be relevant. Okay, so I can certainly begin if you want me to, because that's why I wanted to bring a map forward. It's one of the maps you made out of the Tibetans' material. And I just about have it now. And here it is. Yeah. Open and open sesame here. Okay. This is the map. And
we don't see anything, Michael.
You will in just a moment. Okay. This is very familiar to us. Now, what we have been talking about is the White Island, which is a precipitation on these levels of the etheric physical plane. I mean, Shambhala apparently is completely etheric, this White Island. So unless we have, and DK tells us, a real ability to see the ethers. We're not going to find some dense, some place in our usual dense matter that we call Shambhala. It's going to be found in the four ethers right here, and probably, unless I, this is my estimation, it's going to be found in the higher two of those ethers, because always when you have a sevenfold division, the highest two are considered the truly occult division. So the first subplane and the second plane. And you know, you've heard about people that kind of, they go to the Gobi Desert, you know, and they're looking for Shambhala. Well, of course, you know, they'll never find it in that way. But when they are allowed, and when they have the etheric vision, they will find it. Now, but entry is a whole nother matter. See, in some ways, the idea of Shambhala has become popularized, and because it is more popular, we think of it in terms such as we find all around us that the senses can report. But now I want to say this, excuse me, that the real Shambhala is found in the cosmic ethers. And maybe that is an idea that is familiar to you. And not only in the cosmic ethers, but the highest two levels of the cosmic ethers is where we can find the real Shambhala, which is a cosmic center and which is projected down into the White Island. You know, actually, Master DK, he writes more about what is in the cosmic etheric Shambhala than he does about the White Island, except to say that it will appear in time and people will be amazed at its presence on the etheric physical plane. So keep that in mind, in a way, that there are two Shambhalas. One of them is the cosmic origin, where the Lord of the world resides, and it's found on the logoic plane here. And great initiates like the Buddha and the Christ have made their way into this higher Shambhala. And then, of course, there must be a direct line all the way down onto our own lesser etheric levels. So that's just a brief idea about location. And people like you and me, well, okay, look, the hierarchy of advanced souls resides here, especially on the Buddhic plane, maybe a few on the higher monastic sub-level, maybe a few on the Atmic plane, but in general, not in Shambhala. Masters of the wisdom, in general, unless they are on the first ray, and maybe then only under certain circumstances, are actually members of Shambhala. Chohans of the sixth degree, they are members of Shambhala, and much, much higher beings that at some point, maybe even now, we'll see, DK writes about and I can mention. So we have an idea about who or what lives or dwells or resides in the cosmic area of Shambhala. Okay, let's see. Are there any thoughts that you would like to share? Yeah, Marianne.
Marianne. Yes.
Yeah, go ahead, dear. Go on.
No, you can.
It's Marianne saying that all these lovely pictures, you know, Rorik, and they are in the public domain. I mean, you can, you know, respectfully use them to somehow dramatize that beautiful area of the world that is so utterly inspiring. And when you read Master Moria, you know, you think of these great paintings, spiritual paintings, that depict a lot of what he's talking about. Certain of the great events, like, you know, he says that here's kind of an event. Was it, I don't know, was it Muhammad communicating with a fiery being? And Rorik has drawn that out. You know, he has made a picture. Or is it Christ in his true Maya Virupa and not in the body of Jesus, out in the desert with a tall, dark, bearded figure whom we assume would be an earlier incarnation of Master Moria? Well, Rorik has drawn that out. So when you read Agni Yoga, you can accompany it by these wonderful, wonderful paintings. So, you know, so that Marianne is saying it fills her with peace and joy, forming a consummate pattern of beauty, pattern of consummate beauty. Yeah, indeed. And the higher we go with our point of tension, the more that beauty will be revealed. Is there anything else you'd like to say up to this point? Because then I can go into one paragraph that I've offered before, but it's good to think about. It's called, it tells you who lives in Shambhala in the cosmic side of it. Anything you want to say to you?
Yes, I was just thinking about emphasizing still that, like, for DK, these first indicator of this, of his work, is to talk about Shambhala. But in the East, the Shambhala and the idea of that secret place and sacred place is very common in the history, at least. And we are talking about the heaven in Christianity and in religion. So that there is this strong direction, thinking in religion, but anyway, to go to some higher and to have permission to reach that place.
See, there are many heavens.
Yeah.
But, you know, and heavens generally are vibratorily far above what we usually experience here in this sensory world. But when Saint Paul discusses the seventh heaven, you know, of course, it's become colloquial. How do you feel? Oh, I'm in seventh heaven, you know, like it's a phrase that, you know, makes you, tells you you're unendingly happy and all of that. In a way, the seventh heaven is Shambhala, because, you know, cosmically, on the seventh plane, which is this fiery world, that is the true council chamber of Shambhala and the seventh heaven. Now, St. Paul, he references this seventh heaven as it is reflected in the third heaven. And the third heaven would be the area of the higher mental plane, down here on plane number three, you see. But as DK said, nobody knew what he was talking about. So, you know, we have these peculiar translations which do not really reveal what that high initiate was experiencing. Let's just say that the first Shambhala impact that we experience individually comes at the third initiation. It is the beginning of the Shambhala experience, obviously not the whole thing by any means, but it is the road to Shambhala, starting at the third degree.
You know, I'm thinking about that, what DK says, to recognize the vibrations of the Christ. And the same way, I think it is a good practice to try to recognize and really realize it about this kind of energetic impact when we have some dim sense what we could name about Shambhala. Just even thinking about the name Shambhala, but to recognize those tiny impacts. And there was some little experiment of animals that it has been recognized that when there are like services done by humans, very often dogs and cats come close to you and they are quiet. They sit down and they like just stay there. And it has been also recognized by birds. That birds are coming near. We do not see them because they are hiding in the bush, but they are like, it looks like that they are recognizing. For us, that is not any miracle, but that it is seen that the vibration, sensing it and being sensitive for energies is also one very important area of studying Shambhala.
Yes. Now, you know, every initiate will have some kind of shambolic experience eventually, but not permanently. When you look at those masters of whom we are most aware, they are the ones who are presently on the path of earth service. And they are retained by Sanat Kumara for a much longer time than the others who simply have a passing association with Shambhala and then go on to other destinations. Right now, we are told that things are so serious on our planet that all of the sixth degree initiates or Chohans make their choice about which one of the paths of higher evolution they will take, but they stay with our planet because Sanat Kumara needs them. And they are responsible for what I would call minor shambolic impacts. And what do I mean by that? When the year 1903 came, 1952, 2001, and the year ahead of us, 2050, there is the great decision of the sixth degree initiates who are associated with Shambhala. And when they make a decision, it may not be a full shambolic impact, but it's a huge event and can be extremely disruptive to the normal way that human beings conduct their business. Now, right now, we not only are we in the wake, you know, like a boat has a wake, of the year 2000 Shambhala impact, but we're in the wake of the 2001 great decision by the retained 40 Chohans of the sixth degree. And the next time that comes will be 30 years from now. So, you know, the big question that we can ask ourselves is, what are we working out now between the year 2001 and the year 2050? Now, you know, if we're around, many of us will be in a new incarnation, and we'll be participating in that. But that's coming right in the middle of the decline of the Piscean and sixth ray forces and the greater emergence of the seventh ray forces. I think you know so much about the sense of synthesis, about being everywhere, about the sense of omnipresence has come in on the last two great decisions of 1952 and 2001. It is a much more synthesized world. So in other words, our contact with Shambhala is getting stronger and stronger. That's my point. Okay, that's the point. Okay, any further thoughts? I have a little bit more that might be of interest today.
There is no other, so okay. You can forward.
Okay, so now I want to look at the membership of Shambhala. Now, basically, he's saying, you know, you're a third degree initiate, you're even a master of wisdom, but, you know, the beginning of the Shambhalic influence is occurring to you. And by the time you're a master, you're still at the apex of being a soul. You're still a human being. But then we learn in the rules of the Chohans, they are no longer men as are the masters. So we have fulfilled the five-pointed star and our new residents of Shambhala fulfilling the six-pointed star. Now, it's very interesting that Master Moria, who has so much to do with Shambhala today, when he was Akbar the Great, we were there in the year 2000, and we were in his complex and so forth. Every one of his buildings had the six-pointed star on it. And that was his trademark, and that's called the Seal of Solomon, or the Seal of Solar Man, and it is a great cosmic symbol. So when we have fulfilled the five-pointed star, which in the Da Vinci drawing is depicted from the cross to the five-pointed star, that's then we set about the task of fulfilling the six-pointed star, which is Shambhalic. Eventually, there will be a fulfillment of the seven-pointed star and even the eight-pointed star. Now, can you see what it says here? The council chamber membership. So we'll take a look at that. I want to make it a little bit bigger. Okay. Now, and where are these beings? Now, you see, when I'm talking about these beings, I'm not talking about, well, what am I talking about? Here, now I think I should have it. I'm not talking about the White Island. Of course, you know, such beings as this can come and go, and via the highest subplane of every plane, they have like a direct accelerated route to go up and down the various planes. But I'm not talking about the White Island. I'm talking about the Logoic plane and the Monadic plane particularly. Hierarchy seems to end here. It includes the realm of the spiritual triad. Hierarchy, the spiritual hierarchy, is operating within the personality of the monad. The personality of the monad, just like down here, the personality of the soul, is found on the realms of the spiritual triad. But then when we go, you know, here, Atma, Buddhi, and higher Manas, when we go beyond that, we are entering really and truly the Shambhalic realms, though there is a sense in which all the cosmic ethers can be considered as part of Shambhala and the four representing four gates of Shambhala, four doors into Shambhala. But the most occult is up here, the Logoic plane and the monadic plane, and the beings that I might mention here, that's where they reside. Okay? Now, you, yeah, dear, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, when we study the senses, so it's going to end on, is it on the third lowest yeah. subplane on atmic
right
plane?
Right here, all knowledge.
All knowledge.
Right.
Oh, that is the third highest.
The third highest, yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah.
Okay, so I'm just wondering if that is where the realm of or influence in that sense ends by the hierarchy, and then from the third on.
Well, you might be right about that, because you might, you know, I think you're right about that, because we're told that the masters cannot really wield the powers of the highest two subplanes. And it takes Chohans to do that. But we're also told, and this complicates the issue a little bit, that the masters themselves cannot reach the higher two subplanes on the Buddhic level as well. So it's always the higher two that are somehow connected with Shambhala particularly. You know, the in other words, Ray 1 and Ray 2, the highest two subplanes of any system of planes are the most Shambhalic planes. So we're, you know, with these beings, however, they are members of the Great Council. Okay? So let's take a look at who they are. Let's see if I get it right. Yeah. So Sanat Kumara, of course, yes. The three Buddhas of activity, they are members of the Great Council.
Michael, your microphone is really scrapping something.
Okay, it's my beard, I'm afraid.
Yeah, that is better.
Okay. So let me know if I get scratchy here. So the three Buddhas of activity are members of the Great Council. Where is the Great Council found? It's found on the very highest levels of Shambhala, on the Logoic levels. Remember how great these beings were, and they are participating under the law of sacrifice with Sanat Kumara, but they were already in the previous solar system. They were planetary Logoi on the intelligence aspect. Now that's a pretty, that's a very advanced stage of development. They are members of Shambhala. Okay. Are expressions of the counterparts on cosmic levels of the latent, energies latent in the three permanent atoms of the three worlds of human endeavor. So there is an association here of these three Buddhas with the three permanent atoms. He says, but don't take it too far. This is a dangerous parallel to propose. It's just a symbol, and it lacks any true analogy. Now, sometimes you look at those three Buddhas, and I'm going to see where will they be found. I'm going to look at another map, and this other map, excuse me just for a second, all I have to do is find it. and we'll get the idea. So I'm going to move that over. And here are the AAB diagrams, and here are the solar and planetary hierarchies, which I'll show you now. And because this is not a complete drawing. Now, if you look here in the realm of Sanat Kumara and the planetary logos, what you see is Kumara 1, Kumara 2, Kumara 3. And they're like, you know, three permanent atoms, but it doesn't, it's not a true analogy. They are planetary logoi from the previous major solar system who worked on the intelligence aspect, intelligent will, intelligent love, intelligent intelligence. And they've come to help Sanat Kumara, our planetary logos, and they are beneath him because they are sacrificing. But what is missing, at least from my understanding, there should be three more circles above Sanat Kumara. And those are called the three esoteric Kumaras. And actually, I think, you know, we have names for those, because in the secret doctrine, he gave us the names. I don't want to go hunting for them right now, but, you know, Sanjuta, all names that are very, very similar, plus the word Kapila, who has connection with great power. The three circles above are missing in this diagram, in my view. And what happens is that there is a rotation that occurs between the esoteric Kumaras and the three Buddhas of activity that we call exoteric Kumaras. So the esoteric are missing, and the exoteric presently are shown, but there's some kind of substitution which can go on. In any case, all these six, even the three that you don't see, are members of the Council of Shambhala. When Sanat Kumara came to our globe 18 million years ago, I guess, 18 something, we hear about the 105 Kumaras, Sanat Kumara and 104. But then the number 108 rings in our ears. And when the number 108 is used, it includes the three esoteric Kumaras. And sometimes I wonder, you know, here are three subsidiary logoi, and they're up here in connection with the solar logos, and I do wonder whether there are not esoteric logoi that surround the solar logos, just like there are down here. Okay, so I had to show that, and you'll see why in a minute. So anyway, the three Buddhas of activity, so important in the triangle's work, so important in ways in initiation and in the supervision of the animal kingdom and in all the affairs of humanity, because humanity has so much of the third ray still, are found as residents of Shambhala. Okay. Now, who else? What else? The seven spirits before the throne of God are also members of the council. The sacred planets are seven spirits before the throne of the solar god. But who are the seven spirits with respect to our planetary logos? They are the Ray Lords. And they're right up there in the council chamber of Shambhala, and all of the esoteric psychology that we have been studying is related to these Ray Lords and their cycles. And the cycles, we don't know so much about them. There are smaller cycles, larger cycles, but they come from these Ray Lords. And each of them, each of these seven spirits, is in close rapport and contact with one or other of the seven sacred planets. So what you see is that there are seven sacred planetary logoi surrounding the solar logos. They are larger seven spirits before the throne, and they are reflected on our planet with the seven spirits before the throne. So each of them, of these seven Ray Lords, are in touch with the seven spirits before the throne. Okay, so that's from Discipleship Volume 2. And in Rays and Initiations, it elaborates it even further. Maybe I'll just finish that little bit. And then if you have any questions or thoughts. Now, it says, few of the great lives who form the inner group of the council chamber at Shambhala. And by the way, no matter what esoteric group you have, you always need an inner esoteric core. And that inner esoteric core can be depicted by a triangle and a point in the center. In this case, probably Sanat Kumara as the center point, and from one way of looking at it, the Buddhas of activity as the triangle. So, who is here up in this council chamber? And the council chamber will be on the logoic plane. If the Christ himself and the Buddha have ascended to the logoic plane from which they are preparing to take the eighth initiation, which they have not yet taken, nor have they completed the seventh, then certainly Sanat Kumara is directing all affairs from the higher part of the logoic plane. So, the Shambhala experience is beginning here, and we're discussing page 141 and 142. Even the newly accepted member to Shambhala, who is a Chohan, has ahead of him greater beings. Now, the Supernal Three, who are they? I just described it. The Supernal Three are the esoteric Kumaras that I said were missing from that diagram where only the three Buddhas of activity were shown. So they are members of the council. The Radiant Seven. Who are the Radiant Seven? The Radiant Seven are the seven Ray Lords that are responsible for all of our developmental ray cycles. Then we have other lives, the lives embodying the 49 fires, and they are more in control of the Brahmic aspect of life. And by the way, I would like to say probably the seven or 49 spirits of darkness, which are referenced in A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, are also members of the higher council. And then we would expect, and it has been said, the Buddhas of activity are members of the higher council. And this is new, certain eternal spirits from such centers of dynamic spiritual life as Sirius. So some sort of Sirianly connected being or beings are found in the council chamber, because let's remember that the whole initiatory process which the human family is going through, and basically initiation on our planet, is directed from the Great Lodge on Sirius. And if they're not from Sirius, from the constellation, which at any one time forms a triangle with our sun and Sirius. Now, you know, what is that constellation? I don't want to hazard a guess, but I do know that both Gemini and Libra, air signs, are very important when you consider the connection to Sirius and the path to Sirius. And also, because Venus is the alter ego, the higher ego, in a way, of our planetary logos, a representative from Venus is also found in the Shambolic Council. Now, so they are of much greater advancement than the newly accepted Shambolic member. And otherwise, who else? All initiates of the sixth degree, yes, can be members of Shambhala. And all and a few masters who have undergone specialized training, they are masters and they're not Chohans, you know. They've undergone specialized training because they are on the first ray of will and power, the ray conditioning Shambhala itself, form part of the Great Council. And then, you know, it just goes on to say a bit more that many masters and Chohans, however, after serving on the planet, retained by Sanat Kumara in various capacities, working with the law of evolution below them, pass out of our planetary life altogether. So that gives us an idea, doesn't it, of the exalted lives that are found in the cosmic correspondence of the White Island. The White Island is, you know, much closer to humanity, and, you know, who knows exactly what kinds of lives are projected into that important and to be discovered center in the Gobi Desert. But the real Shambhala, in its cosmic import, with its cosmic and planetary connections and constellational connections, is found on the logoic plane, particularly, and then to a certain extent represented on the monadic, atmic, and buddhic plane to a degree. But the real council, where everything is directed from, everything is caused, the fundamental archetypes are found, the divine purpose is conceived, these are found on the logoic plane. And that's the kind of lives, those are the kind of lives that we are dealing with. And that's why no average student can just, you know, misunderstanding all of this completely, walk in the door of Shambhala. Oh, you know, I had a Shambhala impact this morning or whatever. it isn't true. And we have to have a lot of humility in the face of what DK has said here.
Michael, Yeah. When we study this, one starts to have the perspective, which is so much vaster. Normally, we talk about in relationship to our Earth, but if we think about really of those, what it was, eternal spirits from such centers of dynamic spiritual life as Sirius, which are huge, we are learning that the even the connection to Sirius is not just everyday thing, that what it was, that only once in our solar system the
has an initiator, you know, from Sirius
has come from Sirius. And that's why I'm thinking about Shambhala now completely from the, not from the perspective at all from our planet. It looks like that it has a great aspect of our solar logoic center. And how is that structure? I was just thinking about when we talk about this, the Radiant 7, that is that for our planet, our planetary structure? Does every planet has their own? So yeah. Then these lives, the lives embodying the 49 fires, it looks like that all these seven sacred planets and their Radiant 7 makes this the lives of the 49 fires.
They will all have their correspondences, you know, to our Shambhala, to our Radiant 7, to our lesser beings surrounding the logos of that planet. But of course, so little is given out about the other planets, just that maybe more is given about Venus, you know, than about the other planets. But the one thing that is given, the hints that are given, have to do with the kinds of schools you find on the different planets and what is being learned. But not all of the planets are listed. So the ancient lore about the planets, maybe in mythology you can find it, but DK doesn't give out too much other than the school nature of the planet when he's talking about the other planetary logoi. But of course, they have a first aspect, a second aspect, a third aspect, and they have a controlling center. And, you know, we don't know the details. And we don't, well, really need to know the details yet. We have to come to terms with our own hierarchy and Shambhala and complete those triangles which are trying to be completed now.
Yeah, because, you know, if we think about that, that this structure would also relate to other planets. We
it
are
would,
not sacred. No, let me finish the idea. Yeah. So our planet is not sacred. So then it does not... we cannot count this, this 49 fires, because they would then be the seven sacred planets and their Radiant 7. So we have now non-sacred planets. And to us is related to those three Buddhas of activity from earlier solar system. So then... do they, all the other planets, have their Buddhas of activity? Gosh, this is...
Well, they have probably a triple differentiation to represent the first, second, and third rays, as they express. If you think of how sacred our non-sacred planet really is, and you think about these high, beautifully sacred things that are going on with respect to our planet, we can only imagine what it is for the true sacred planets. That inner structure and all of that, we can conjecture about it, we can suppose about it. Probably all we can say really is that the various aspects of divinity, the three major rays and then the four minor rays, in some way have to be represented through every one of these planetary loci. What the method may be, we don't know. You know, how much has been gathered about Venus, its humanity is advanced, it's finished in five rounds, what most planets take as seven rounds, you know, but those are just big generalities. For the Earth, he's given us something more concrete because here we are at home on the Earth and we have to deal with that first.
But this high, the council chamber at Shambhala is in its highest realms are very high. If we
and hierarchical, hierarchically arranged. See, obviously, now the Christ and the Buddha, they're just new. They're just new to this, and the 6-degree initiates. They're even newer. So, when you could look at, like you were saying, some of the huge lives that are having input into the council chamber of Shambhala, it is a big hierarchy. Shambhala itself is a hierarchy.
If they are lives which are out of our solar system, so that is a huge and big mystery that are these the same spirits which are related to the other our solar systemic planets and their councils, or do they have then different eternal spirits?
Well, I would say probably. well, you know, you cannot say in the field of occultism, well, you can't be in two places at the same time, because indeed you can. But I would say that every planet will have its particular designated lives, and they will be representing cosmic sources. So what this should do, everybody, is present us with a huge picture of what we're dealing with when we're dealing with Shambhala. Now, the beginning of it is to achieve the third initiation and to understand even the tiniest bit about the divine will of the Great Council, represented by Sanat Kumara on our particular globe, in our particular planetary scheme. Sanat Kumara, let's say the planetary logos through Sanat Kumara is taking a kind of important incarnation right on our globe. And that's what we need to learn about and how that affects how we respond to the divine will. That's what we have to learn. Makes my head dizzy when I think about how vast this is. And yet, it's just one little solar system. And then you start to compare that with what the maps show us about the cosmic logoi and the one about whom naught may be said, and you know. So, you know, it's an exciting universe, and we're on the path of return to universal fullness. And if we keep the big picture, now you realize, of course, how small a picture of possibilities the average dogmatic religionist or idealist has. Is very narrow, very concrete, very limiting. Now we're trying to offer a really big picture here. And sometimes when you do that, you get into trouble. You know, there have been great thinkers, and they've offered a vision that was beyond the people, and the people just rejected them and killed them, basically. And that happened to Giordano Bruno, which started the Catholic counter-reformation. In other words, they worked against Martin Luther. And Bruno was a great thinker, and he offered ideas about the cosmos. It also happened, although he survived it, with Nicholas Copernicus, the so-called Copernican revolution. The Earth was not the center. And then came the idea that the sun was not the center. And then we're going to get into the idea that the galaxy is not our center. And all of these challenge the limited ideas of the time. And people are not happy about being stretched too far from what they're clinging to tightly, as we have seen in the riots in the United States and the attack on the Capitol, and people just shouting out the most simplistic formulas and using the magical effect of the group voice to do that without really knowing they're doing that. They want to hang on to the concrete. People like ourselves are introducing them to something more vast, and you have to be careful how you do it and with whom you do it, and eventually the picture will grow.
Michael, I was just looking this. This is from Cosmic Fire.
Yes.
Says, such entities from Sirius appear at the occasion of the initiation of the Solar Logos, and they have a peculiar connection with the five Kumaras, and through them, using them a focal points for force with the Mahachohan's department in all the occult hierarchies of the system. Only once has such a being visited our system, in connection with the appearance in time and space of the fine mind-born sons of Brahma. The effect of such a visit as that of the avatar from Sirius is seen as the sum total of civilization and culture, weaving these from the standpoint of the entire system and in one flash of time.
Now DK is really challenging us with a statement like that. And obviously the concrete mind cannot understand what he just said. It requires higher levels of mind to, but apparently, there are different types of entities with different purposes that can visit from Sirius. Now, this was obviously a great initiator. And are there lesser beings? Well, from a certain perspective, every solar angel that comes back from Sirius is now a Sirian being and revisiting our solar system. So it is certainly possible that there would be lesser visitors than the kind of huge power of that being that you are discussing there.
Yeah, they are called cosmic avatars.
Yeah, it's in the section on avatars. But believe me, this book, Cosmic Fire, paints a picture about as big as we can conceive. And we've been given an initiatory book. The manual for initiation is Discipleship 2. It's simpler, but profound. And then the details of the initiatory vision are given in Cosmic Fire. As far as we can understand, and DK would say, hey, it's just the ABCs, So we have to be very grateful that such a true vision has been given without all the exaltation of glamour and the galactic this and the galactic that, and, people, the talking, expanding beyond rationality. With DK, you can trust it. Well, whew, takes my breath away. Is there anything
just wondering,
anyone?
Yeah, Yes, I was just coming to the same that just wondering if there would be any questions or any comments anybody wants to share.
Maybe it
everybody
takes your
breath, busy.
Breath away too, you know, without breath you can't speak. So, okay, well, you know, and we'll go on to you with your PowerPoint on that, because, you know, it's very uplifting, and it gives us that scope. We begin with a huge scope. That's the occult way. And we work our way down into what it means for our individual and for our group life. I don't know when the next time we get together on Shambhala is, maybe next week.
I think not. I will check that.
Okay.
Or
okay,
Anne, can you check that?
If Anne is here? Is Anne here?
Anne is here.
Okay, good. All right, so it'll be on the weekly program. And look, you know,
so we have twice a week, twice a month, morning and evening. And then we have, I think it is Identify as Being is going to be then the next one, next 2 weeks.
But well, we have diversified, but remember, all of these subjects are one big subject in synthesis. And when you can begin to appreciate that we're not just studying this and then just studying this and studying this, but they're all interrelated, then the faculty of pure reason can begin to develop in the consciousness. It won't develop fully in this incarnation, or who knows, the next or the next, but it can begin when we can connect all of these different perspectives, so that wherever you are in this great sphere of knowledge, it can lead to anywhere else. That's what we have to understand. Let's see here. What have we got?
Right.
Oh, Cindy. Cindy's expressing appreciation. Thank you, Cindy, and thank you, everyone.
And I'm just looking now. Maybe Anne was not there, so I am not. I'm looking the away.
Okay, our representatives. Yeah, it's okay. We'll manage. The point is, we're only studying one thing, friends. It is the synthesis of knowledge. Understandingly studied. Synthesis of knowledge, understandingly studied, and of course it will affect our meditation and our service.
Michael, next Thursday it's going to be Identify as Being at 6 p.m. GMT, and then on the 25th of February, it's going to be 6 a.m. Identify as Being. So the next time when we have Shambhala is going to be the 4th of March, 6 p.m. GMT.
Okay. All right. That's okay. I mean, if we were in one of the new esoteric schools and we were residents of such a school and we were all, you know, living in the same school area, it would be a different thing, and it will be a different thing. And then, and it will be very demanding, friends. What I'm doing right now, I have a commentary on the new esoteric schools. It's letter 9 from Letters on Occult Meditation, and you can find it on Makara. And it's all of DK's text, plus what I had to say about it. So it's about 160 pages. That's the future. But what I'm doing right now is in a more casual, spontaneous video manner, I'm talking about the same things. So already some of that is appearing on Makara, and the book is completed. Well, you know, completed. What I have to say about it at this time is completed almost, and you can find it on Makara, and you can find it on YouTube. And look toward the future, because many of you here today and in these various programs will be part of the new esoteric schools, which will be one of the great ways of hierarchy influencing humanity, and also through the New World Religion, and also through Masonry. So the future is beautiful and glorious and filled with potential, and we have to get through the struggles of the present day, which are considerable. Anything else before we do the great invocation? Tuya, would you like to do the great invocation?
I tried to find a photo for you.
Okay, well, I can find something.
No, it's from here, from Lapland. I don't know why it is not showing. So if you, I would have so much wanted to show you.
I know. Well, we'll just have to go along as we go.
Here.
And here is it. Here is at least the great invocation. Yes.
This is where I am at the moment.
Wait, you'll have to show it in your...
Is it not
showing? It's not showing. You have to go into new share.
I am... it says from my end that it is showing. Really?
Are you in new share? But then you have to click in new share the photo, and a blue thing will go around it, a blue border.
No, it's green. You do not see that?
No.
What do you see?
I just see the great invocation that I just put up. So you'll have to... You'll have to take over.
And people from our group say that. Do you see that?
No, we don't see yours, Tuya.
Aha. Okay, that's strange, because it says that I am sharing my screen. So, okay, it cannot be shown then. I have
something.
To work
something
it.
Strange. But anyway, we can. We'll do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then let
some
us
of, end. Been there. Okay.
So let us imagine that we are somewhere there in Himalayas, in beautiful Himalayas. And we try to reach this great energy of Shambhala, some tiny touch. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out. And may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Om. Om. And thank you for everybody and many blessings. Lots of love. Bye-bye.
Okay. And today, Tuya, we have the new moon meditation.
Yes, you have the new moon meditation at, and, what was it? I was just putting it away. Let me see.
And followed by the EUN, you know.
It's 6:20 p.m. GMT.
Is that the new moon itself, or is that when we begin?
We begin 6:20 p.m. GMT.
Okay. Okay, and then we have EUN at what time?
9 p.m.
GMT. Esoteric United Nations GMT. Okay, so you're welcome to join us, you know, if you want to stay with it on the Esoteric United Nations, okay? All right. And thank you for your kind thoughts. And we'll carry on later on today. Okay, we'll carry on later today. So bye for right now. And lots of love and many blessings. This will be up before long, and also, I think, on YouTube as well, I believe. Okay. Bye for now.